Oh, hey, good afternoon, Juno. It's just a few seconds before 3 o'clock. Pat Moore, your host today on a Juno Afternoon here on KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. My guests today will include Ken Fix, who's coming in to tell us about the planetarium presentation for tonight. Colleen McKenzie will join us to talk about her selection as one of the Women of Distinction Aware awardees this year. Koichi Funayama will be here to tell us give us a preview of his presentation. And Patrick Murphy from Gastineau Elementary will tell us about their music program. We'll have Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and a little bit more here on Juno Afternoon. The weather looks like periods of rain and snow. We're seeing some of that out the window right now. Snow will accumulate up to an inch or so. Highs around 37, east winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. Our guests with us in a moment. Right now, National Native News.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Hearings began this week to determine if the Canadian government is discriminating against First Nations children. Dan Karpinchuk has more.
The hearings didn't come without a fight. The allegations from the Assembly of First Nations Child and Caring Society is that Ottawa is discriminating against Native families and children by funding child welfare at levels that are far lower than what's provided by the provincial government's off reserves. It took 7 years of legal wrangling. Under the Indian Act, the federal government is responsible for funding health, education, police services, and child welfare on reserves. But Native organizations argue that child welfare services on reserves get 22% less money than off-reserve services, even though the need is greater. Craig Benjamin is a campaigner for Indigenous peoples with Amnesty International, which made the first submission to the hearings in Ottawa.
The failure to provide adequate resources for child and family services for First Nations children growing up on reserves has had a consequence of taking just so many children unnecessarily away from their families, from their communities, from their culture, that it is creating a situation where we are extending the injustices of the past, we're extending the same kind of harms to culture and community that were inflicted through the residential school era.
The Assembly of First Nations and other experts estimate that there are at least 27,000 Aboriginal children who have been removed from their immediate families. That's about double the number who were forced from their homes and into residential schools during the late 1940s and 50s. Sean Atleo is the national chief of the AFN.
The discriminatory practices and continued federal policies to separate First Nations children from their parents, families, and communities must come to an end once and for all.
The tribunal is trying to determine if the federal government discriminates against First Nations children in the provision of child welfare services. It's a case that could have far-reaching repercussions, not just for families, but in the areas of funding of First Nations education, policing, and health care. The hearings are expected to last about 3 months. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Tribal and city leaders in northern Wisconsin stood in solidarity Monday against proposed mining bills. Daniel Kading from WRNC reports.
Supporters of mining legislation say it will create much-needed jobs in northern Wisconsin, but city and tribal leaders on Lake Superior's South Shore say the bills endanger future job creation. Officials from Ashland, Bayfield, and Washburn, along with those from the Bad River, Red Cliff, and Lacouture tribes, painted their communities as vibrant places with economies thriving on natural resources. Washburn Mayor Scott Griffiths says a mine in the Pinoki Range would change that.
We do not need the extractive industries to try and solve the problems of our rural communities. Another ride on the boom-bust cycle is not what we need to see here in northern Wisconsin.
Bad River Tribal Chairman Mike Wiggins says there will be a lot of job creation for lawyers if lawmakers sign off on the mining legislation.
Preparing to litigate in federal court is part of our effort to just merely try and protect ourselves.
Wiggins says mining would have horrible implications for their groundwater, air quality, and way of life. The tribes aren't the only ones who view mining as a threat. Ashland Mayor Bill Whalen says his city is dealing with its own $130 million cleanup as the result of pollution from industries long gone.
I would hate to think that 30 or 40 years from now, there's a mayor of Ashland, Bayfield, and Washburn, and tribal chair dealing with a cleanup issue on Lake Superior and saying to themselves, what were they thinking about when they passed this legislation?
Backers of mining legislation say the permitting process needs to be streamlined in order to attract mining companies to the state. They argue mining can be expanded in the state without harming the environment. For National Native News, I'm Danielle Kading in Ashland.
During this month in 2012, the Vatican announced Kateri Tekakwitha would be canonized as a Catholic saint. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use PIC-CLIC-GIVE when filing online for your PFD. When you select KNBA-FM, Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, you support National Native News. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's about 6 minutes after 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. My first guest today is the master of the night sky, one of the several, I guess, masters of the night sky at the Marie Drake Planetarium. Ken Fix is here, and he's got a whole bunch of things to tell us about.
Well,
the most important of which is tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Pat. Well, it's kind of a team effort, but tonight's presentation happens to be mine. So I'm doing a presentation on stars and why our sun seems so ordinary.
Mm-hmm.
It actually isn't that ordinary compared to the other stars out in the universe, but it's one of the smaller variety that's out there.
So we're sort of a ho-hum corner
we
star.
We are. Huh? Over half the stars have companions. They have partners. Our nearest neighbors happens to be a system of three stars. It's Proxima Centauri and then Alpha and Beta Centauri. So it's three stars that are our nearest neighbors between 4.2 and about 4.8 light years away.
And the sun is ordinary in what other ways?
Well, it's ordinary in that it functions just like any other star does. It fuses hydrogen to helium. That's the stage that we're in. It's called being on the main sequence. So we've been in the main sequence now for about 4.6 billion years. The sun has fused about 30% of its available hydrogen into helium.
So we can look forward to of a future.
Pretty much about another 5 billion out of it,
okay.
You know, give or take. it should be around for quite a while.
Yeah. Okay.
And we're also looking at, not only will I describe how stars are born, but also how they die. And there's quite a bit of difference depending on the size of the star, what we wind up getting out of it when they die.
So you follow that with the usual kind of feature that you do practically every time you do one of these shows, and that's the stars tonight.
Right. We'll do a presentation on the stars tonight, use the star ball, create the night sky for tonight in Juneau that you probably can't see because it's snowing out there.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And
we'll get an inch according to the weather forecast.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, even so, the show starts at 6:30. You'll be able to see the stars in Juneau.
And it's not snowing inside the planetarium.
No, there's snow there. Might have to brush off your car when you get out, though.
Yeah, yeah.
But I will be describing a little bit of the stars that I'm also using in the presentation, so I'll show you where to find them. And once I do the presentation, I'll talk about them, each one, what they're like, how big they are, how long they're expected to last, how far away they are from us. Even though when you look up at the sky and you kind of think, wow, they all look like they're about the same distance away. They aren't. They're very deceptive in how far away or how close they are.
Science fiction stories always have to deal with the fact that somehow fictionally you have to get around the idea that you can immediately transport yourself from one star to another. You mentioned that Proxima Centauri is four and a half light years away.
Down the street for us.
Yeah, but at our current rocket speeds in space, even if we had advanced devices without warp speed, basically
we're probably looking at generational flights that would take several thousand years out and back.
Yes. Yeah. So it's always wonderful when warp drive shows up on the TV screen and we can get from one star to another.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward.
Yeah, delete all the empty space in between. Just go from one place to another. That's that would be fabulous.
Yeah. Yeah, but the light that you're going to show people tonight is a light that's been a long time getting to us.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, just the fact that the sun, until I started doing the in-depth research, didn't really know that it did this. But when the sun fuses hydrogen into helium at its core, it releases photons, but those don't get out immediately. In fact, they bounce around in there for almost 170,000 years before they get to the surface of the sun. because there's so much interaction and so many other atoms that want to absorb those photons and don't want to release them. So by the time those photons get out, they've been in existence for 170,000 years, and then it takes 8 minutes for it to zip across space and reach us here on Earth. I didn't know it took that long.
No, I was like, wow, really? They bounce around for that long?
Yeah. That's incredible.
Amazing. Okay, so then there's more stuff coming up.
Oh, there's lots more. Next week, on Thursday the 7th, the Harborview Science Fair will be in process from 5 to 7 p.m. We've been asked to participate, having the planetarium open that evening. So we're going to be putting on shows that will be probably about 20 minutes in duration while the Harborview Science Fair is going on. So as we bring people in for an audience, we'll show them the stars, and there's also a short presentation I'll do on myths in the heavens in order to get people acquainted with the Big Dipper and the Little Dipper and the myths that are associated behind that. I've done that before for some school groups. Also on the 8th, we have a guest speaker that's in town, Dennis Mamana. And at 7 p.m. at the planetarium, he will be presenting The World at Night, and that would be a $5 admission for the planetarium. Normally our shows are free, like tonight, so come on down when it's free. And then on the 10th, Saturday, that would be the 9th, he's doing a night sky photography workshop at the Shepherd of the Valley Church in the Valley. And that's an $89 cost. It runs from 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. But for anybody that's interested in taking night sky pictures, this is the guy you want to talk to. He's the one that takes people on expeditions up into Fairbanks to photograph the aurora. He takes people over to Iceland to do that. So the guy is extremely versatile. We had him here last year. And then on the 10th, he's presenting at 6:30 at the planetarium, Seven Wonders of the Universe. That's also a $5 admission at the planetarium since he is our guest speaker. And upcoming beyond that, we have the Big Bang for Beginners that will be on March 26th. And Steve Kosis, one of my other partners at the planetarium, is putting that one on. And then later on the 30th of April, I will be repeating the Space Telescopes presentation for those that didn't get to see it. And so we're getting kind of busy.
Oh, nice.
Also like to thank our benefactors, the Juno Lions Club, as well as Holland America Cruise Lines. We also have a grant that we've received, which is a matching grant. So anybody that comes to even a free show and makes a donation, those are matched dollar for dollar by our other benefactor.
And we're still working on replacing the star ball with...
Well, that's what the whole thing's about. We're trying to get a digital star ball, and that cost on that is somewhere around $80,000 to get what we want. In the meantime, we're nursing the 68-year-old Spitz star ball analog projector, and while it is still pretty functional for what we do, we'd love to have a digital projector.
Which would allow wonderful things like being able to age the sky to any date.
Plus import other programs that people have done at other planetariums, too. So we'd be on track with that rather than just creating our own, which is what we do here.
Yeah. Well, you certainly do a great job of putting together really interesting programs, and bringing Dennis Mamana up again is wonderful. The guy's website is just full of wonderful images.
Oh, and I'm sure he's going to have his aurora photographs are probably going to be for sale, too. I believe last year it was 2 for $30, I think, was for some very beautiful, matted pictures of the aurora, and he autographs them. He'll be available, I'm sure, on the 7th and the 9th on the 8th and the 10th when he does his shows at the planetarium. And if you're at the Night Sky Workshop, you may even have stuff there, too, in the Valley.
This is a popular enough event that if you want to go to the Shepherd of the Valley Lutheran Church presentation, the Night Sky Photography Workshop, you probably should do something about getting a reservation. Is there someone that you call?
I believe it's on the sheet that you've got
it
there.
It says visit the planetarium website for more information. So evidently
www.mariedrakeplanetarium.org, O-R-G, and information should be on there about how to register for the Night Sky Photography Workshop.
Okay, but you should do that because it's likely that event will fill up.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, because I figure there's probably only got room for about 30 or 40 people.
Right. So if this is something that you think about doing, then go out there. Now, one more time, tonight at 6:30 p.m., the free show at the planetarium, Ken Fix is going to talk about the stars and why ours is so ordinary.
Yes.
Okay. And that's the regular weekly show at the planetarium. And then the other thing to kind of keep in mind is next week during the science fair at Harborview, from 5 to 7 p.m., the planetarium will be open. The children can get in free. And there are nice little short 20-minute shows to sort of augment the science fair.
Exactly. That's what we have planned.
Ken, thank you so much for bringing us up to date on the planetarium.
Thanks for having me again, Pat.
Big Doings coming up at Marie Drake Planetarium tonight, show at 6:30 with Ken Fix, Stars and Why Ours Is So Ordinary. And then next Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, we have a guest coming to town. Dennis Mamana is coming back, a wonderful night sky photographer who will be doing a night sky workshop at Shepherd of the Valley Lutheran Church on Saturday. And that one requires advance reservation. And then he'll do two shows at the planetarium, one on Friday, March 8th at 7 p.m. And another on Sunday, March 10th at 7 p.m. So this is the week probably to take in the planetarium. My next two guests are stars of a different kind. There is an annual award to, I believe, four women of distinction, and we are in the midst of that. Colleen McKenzie is here. She is one of the ladies who has been selected for this honor, and with her is Sarah Lynn Tabachnik. And you're here to tell us about the event that is coming up where we will be able to hear these four ladies speak.
Right.
Yeah.
Saturday night is our 17th annual Women of Distinction Gala. We have a catered sit-down dinner and silent auction. And we honor four women who the AWARE Board of Directors have chosen from about 20 nominees from people in the community. And it's really just a splendid, delightful, fun, inspiring event that is really uplifting to all of the community.
Who have been some of the women in the past?
Well, we've had over the years, first 17 years, we've had, for example, Karen Robinson, who was the founding director of AWARE. We've had, last year we had Amy Dressel was one of the honorees, Megan Gregory we honored as a young woman of distinction, Selena Everson was one of our honorees over time, Frida Westman, Nora Dauenhauer, Dolores Cadiente, go on and on.
So when the call came at 3 o'clock in the morning from Sweden,
my Nobel Prize,
were you surprised?
I was definitely surprised when I got the call from Sarah. At first, I thought, "Oh, she's going to ask me to be on the board."
Not another board. I can't do it.
I really did. And I was excited about that because, yeah, that would be another honor. And so then she talked to me for a little bit, and then all of a sudden she said, "Do you know why I'm calling?" And I said, "No." And from there,
as you began to prepare the reasons that you couldn't do this, whatever it was.
So I was doubly honored. To know that I had been selected and overwhelmed and moved and humbled, and I just let her talk for a few, and then I wanted to know who, you know, who were the people behind this, and then she gave me the names of many, many wonderful, wonderful friends who and coworkers, and I can't be more honored, and I want to say thank you to all of them and to Aware.
Well, it's absolutely clear from your biography that you are a woman with a mission, and I gather from what it says here that this actually grew out of your childhood.
Yes, I've been a fighter all my life and passionate about, you know, things that I take on, and Junior Youth Services is a perfect fit for me because I am allowed to help the coworkers in my human resource background and at the same time serve the families and so many people of need, and I get so much from helping people. This is who I am. I'm all about helping people, and so I'm allowed to do that because I work with so many great people who allow me to do that. So I am truly blessed.
When you bring up working with the people,
mm-hmm.
our society has a wonderful history of helping people who are in need. We don't have as wonderful a history at getting to the root causes of those needs. Is that an area that you've spent time with?
I don't think I go into the root causes. I think I'm more of a resource now in their lives to help direct them to places that can help them, pick them up, pick themselves up. I try to really, my greatest strength is trying to build confidence in other people while building it in myself. So that's more of where I come into play.
Coming up now Saturday night, you're going to have to be one of four ladies who gets up in front of the microphone and gives a speech.
Mm-hmm.
Without too much of a spoiler, what are you going to say to this crowd?
Thank you.
Don't stop there.
Yeah. Thank you, and what a surprise. And I cannot believe from where I came from to where I am is what my story is going to be, without giving away too much. And, you know, how women stick together, and we just are a remarkable resource for each other. We are there for each other. We expose ourselves to each other, and we have no problem telling each other the truth. And so I am aware is couldn't be a better organization that could help me and have me stand up there and be honored.
The chances are really good mm-hmm. that sitting in your audience Saturday night, there will be some young lady at one of the tables mm-hmm. out there who is likely to be in this position a few years later. What do you want her to hear from what you say?
I want her to hear not to give up, to feel passion and to fight, and sometimes not always say the right thing, and sometimes stumble over your words and still continue on, and because you can come out the other side.
Sarah Lynn, who are the other winners this year?
The other honorees are Mary Ellen Arvold.
I'm sorry, honorees,
yeah,
not
yeah.
winners.
But they're kind of winners.
Yes, well, yes, they are winners. All winners, yeah. But it's not a contest.
Exactly.
Right.
Mary Ellen Arvold.
Can you tell us a little bit about who these people
well,
are?
Well, I think we're going to meet with her tomorrow.
Them. Okay.
Right?
All right.
And then
I won't be here. But, yeah.
Jackie Martin.
Okay.
And Kathy Colkhurst Reddy.
Okay.
And then Colleen, of course. Those okay. are our four honorees. Yeah. You know, when you ask Colleen, what was it like to receive the call? I mm-hmm. wanted to say to you, Pat, hey, for me to make that call is one of the favorite parts of my job, as you can imagine.
It's got to be. Yeah.
yeah.
Do you
yeah.
wake them up at 3 a.m?
I don't, because I want it to be a favorite part of them as well.
Okay. Okay, well, we don't have the time zone difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So tell us a little bit about the event. Do people need reservations? And where is it held? And so
sure, thank you. It's held at Centennial Hall. We reserve all three ballrooms and set up tables, rounds of 10. Doors open at 5:30, and from 5:30 to 7, we have a silent auction. Tom Loker plays piano music, which is very nice, so people are able to get beverages, bid on the auction, just kind of get acclimated to the atmosphere. It's also an opportunity for people to dress up a little bit, so if you like to do that, it's kind of nice, even if you don't like to do that, but once in a while, it's very fun. The program begins at 7 p.m. Catherine Heumann is our MC. And Mark Calvert is going to be singing a song for us, This Little Light of Mine. Hmm. He's an opera singer and also an AWARE staff person. And then we will have dinner, and the honorees will speak. Each honoree also has chosen someone who will introduce her. So that person will provide a two-minute introduction, and then the honoree will speak, and we'll all be enthralled. It really, every year, it's such a fabulous event, and every year it's even better and better, and it's hard to believe that it's better, but it just kind of is because it is right in that moment.
You're close to a sellout?
Yeah.
So if somebody wanted to get snap up one of the last-minute tickets, how would they do
it? Right. They should call AWARE at 586-6623. Tickets are $60 each, and we've still got some available, so it would be a great idea. We've got a great dinner, also catered by the Baranoff, that will be served to you. And, I'll say salmon with basil pesto sauce, garlic mashed potatoes, seasonal vegetables.
Sounds like a decent menu. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is every year. Something special for vegetarians.
You know, being someone who likes food, I can get behind it. Obviously, this is a major fundraiser for AWARE.
Right.
So what does AWARE do with the funds it receives?
Thank you, Pat. AWARE stands for people who don't know, Aiding Women in Abuse and Rape Emergencies. And AWARE works with victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, child abuse. We use the funds that we raise to support our operations, our annual operations, be it bring people in from rural areas who need to come to safety, an emergency, or from any part of town who need to come to AWARE for safety. It could be that they were providing legal advocacy services, not which are more community-based versus safe shelter services. It could be providing prevention services in the schools, personal safety education for kids. Also doing groups at AWARE. We offer education and support groups for women and children in the community as well as residents at AWARE. We offer really quite comprehensive services in Juneau and 9 Northern Southeast Alaska communities. So we're really happy to respond to calls. Our crisis line answer 1-800-478-1090. Someone is answering that 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. So just to ensure that we have the staffing, trained staff, that we're able to respond to whatever the need is, meet someone at the hospital, be there, and really be there for people in need. It's hard for people to come forward and say, this happened to me, can you help me? And we really want to meet them where they are and gently walk alongside them.
Well, here is an amazing combination. A wonderful event. Four outstanding women to tell a bit about their lives and how they came to the position that they are in. It sounds like a fine menu from one of the better kitchens in Juneau. And the money that you would pay for this goes straight into a wonderful service to the whole of Southeast Alaska. So what a great combination. One final question for you. Who'd you choose to introduce you?
Stacy Toner.
Why?
Yeah.
Why?
Stacy and I have been friends for 15 years. She has watched me come to Junior Services as assistant to the executive director, and now I'm the assistant executive director. So she's watched me come full circle, and she just, you know, has been there for me all the time.
Well, congratulations on your award, and thank you for telling us about the event.
Pleasure.
I hope it's a great success.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 26th of February, 2013. It's the birthday of the man who said, to love another person is to see the face of God, the French novelist Victor Hugo, born in Besançon, France, 1802. He wrote The Hunchback of Notre Dame when he was in his 20s, became famous and wealthy. He used his fame to advocate for political causes, namely to denounce the regime of Napoleon III and encourage the French to rise up and revolt. So, Napoleon III declared Victor Hugo an enemy of the state, and Hugo fled the country in disguise, went to Brussels, then spent 20 years in exile on the island of Guernsey in the English Channel, where he wrote, standing up at a pulpit, looking out across the water, wrote 20 pages of prose a day, wrote his masterpiece, Les Miserables, published in 1865, about a poor Parisian man who steals a loaf of bread, spends 19 years in jail for it, afterward becomes a successful businessman, mayor of a small town, and then is imprisoned once again for a minor crime in his distant past. The playwright Christopher Marlowe, baptized in Canterbury, England, on this date, 1564, a very gifted boy, son of a shoemaker, went to Cambridge on a scholarship, and it is believed he became a spy for Queen Elizabeth I, posing as a Catholic to gather intelligence on any plots against the Protestant queen. Even less is known about Marlowe than about Shakespeare, but his plays reveal a man who was cynical about religion and politics, who was most likely a homosexual and an atheist in a time when it was very dangerous to be either one, let alone both. But he was a brilliant poet and dramatist, worked in blank verse, inspired Shakespeare to do the same. Before he was stabbed to death in a tavern at the age of 29, he wrote Tamburlaine the Great, Dr. Faustus, The Jew of Malta, Edward II, and The Massacre at Paris, and also Come Live with Me and Be My Love, and we will all the pleasures prove that hills and valleys, dale and field, and all the craggy mountains yield. And it was on this date, 1919, the Grand Canyon National Park was established after a 30-year battle over the opposition of ranchers, miners, and entrepreneurs. Today, the park covers more than 1,900 square miles, the canyon itself 277 river miles long, 10 miles wide, a mile deep. Theodore Roosevelt went to see it in 1903, and he said the Grand Canyon is beyond comparison, unparalleled throughout the wide world. Let this great wonder of nature remain as it now is. You cannot improve on it. But what you can do is to keep it for your children, your children's children, and all who come after you as the one great sight which every American should see. Here's a poem for today by Tom Hannon, In the Late Season. At the soft place in the snowbank, warmed to dripping by the sun, there is the smell of water. On the western wind, the hint of glacier, a cottonwood tree warmed by the same sun on the same day, my back against its rough bark, same west wind, mild in my face. A piece of spring pierced me with love for this empty place, where a prairie creek runs under its cover of clear ice, and the sound it makes, mysterious as a heartbeat, new as a lamb. A poem by Tom Hannon, In the Late Season, from Darkness Sticks to Everything, published by Copper Canyon Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Reputation.com, helping individuals and businesses make their best impression where people learn about them first. On the internet. Learn more at reputation.com. Produced by Nick Vetter. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's about 26 minutes before 4 o'clock on a Tuesday afternoon. You're listening to Juneau Afternoon on KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. And my next guests are going to be speaking. Is it tonight, I think? We have in the studio, we are honored to have the consul of Japan with us today. Sir, would you move that microphone right over in front of your face? Good, because they only pick up if you talk right into them. So this is Koichi Funayama. And he is newly to Alaska, I think, in 2012, came here from Nashville, and has been in the Japanese Foreign Service for a number of years, but was promoted to consul and is serving us in Alaska. Welcome, sir.
Thank you very much.
And also with us is Jim Clark, the president of JWAC, the organization that is sponsoring Mr. Funayama to speak here in Juneau.
That's correct. It's the Juneau World Affairs Council, and Consul Funayama will be speaking tonight at the KTOO studios at 5 o'clock, and we're hoping that the listening audience will come to hear him because he's going to be talking about the very special relationship we have between Alaska and Japan, and he's here today to give us just kind of a brief outline of what he's going to be talking about tonight. So we're looking forward to a nice audience this evening.
This is a very long-running relationship between Japan and Alaska. In many ways, it's almost like nation to nation.
Yes, we have been enjoying a very good relationships over the decades. Yes, from economic field and education, arts. Many things.
If you take a picture of the globe and move around it a little bit, we're very close neighbors. You have to, on a flat map, we don't look like we bump into each other. But if you look on the globe, we are within throwing distance of one another.
Yes, we are neighborhood, and we are good trading partners each other.
There's discussion going on. I just listened last week to our senator who came to the House of Representatives here and spoke to the combined House and Senate. And one of the things she talked a great deal about was the possibility of exporting natural gas to Japan. I think there's a big market for that, and it may be a possibility for us.
There is a possibility, but everything is decided by the market system. That's my understanding. But anyway, Alaska's LNG is actually real in Japan.
Pat, we have been exporting 1 million tons of LNG to Japan since 1960. Hmm. We're the only state in the country, and we're the only part of the United States that ships to Japan, to Tokyo Gas and Electric.
Hmm. When you your offices are in Anchorage.
Yes.
You came here from Nashville, Tennessee.
Yes.
How was the transition? I know when you came, you said that you were very glad to be in Alaska, but now you've been here a year. How's it working out?
As a matter of fact, before I was in the United States almost 5 years, and I lost my interest in the United States at that time. So I went back to Tokyo, worked for the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, but after six months, half a year passed, suddenly I missed United States. So that's why I'm here now.
And of all places, Alaska. Was this something, was this an interest, or did you just respond to the assignment? Did you want to come to Alaska?
Both of them. Ah. Yeah, both. For me, any state is okay for me, as far as I'm in the United States. Any state is okay, but scenery of the Alaska, gorgeous scenery of Alaska attracts my wife and I so much.
When you arrange for a JWAC speaker to come in, what are the kinds of considerations that you go through to decide who you're going to invite?
Well, we are always excited to get someone of Consul Funayama's standing to come speak to us because it's so authentic. They can bring us such a realistic picture of the relationship. So probably at the very top of our list is to get someone who is an official position from another country. So this is a particular thing. And then, of course, we'll look for experts on countries within the United States and who have very, very interesting topics to raise with us. But the Alaska-Japanese relationship has been so important for so long, since the early 1950s. We had, for a period of time, two major business groups, one called Alaska Kai and one called Alaska Nippon Kai, that work closely together, travel back and forth between Japan and the United States many, many times. So it's just wonderful to see that that Japan has a consul here that underlines that importance, and we look for people like that at JWAC.
Were you surprised to be asked to come down and speak to the JWAC?
Not surprised, you know, but this is my pleasure to speak with you, yeah.
And then what else have you done while you've been in Juneau? I understand you were up to see the governor.
I'm sorry?
I understand you visited the governor this afternoon.
Yeah, yes, I met with the Speaker of the House Speaker and Senator Speaker, and I updated what we are doing.
Wonderful. So it combined a little bit of pleasure and an opportunity to speak to a crowd and also some governmental activity as well.
Yeah. But anyway, Japan and Alaska has very important relationships, yes. As I said earlier, Japan imported lots of Alaskan products and energy-related products from Alaska, and this is a benefit for the both for the Japan and Alaska.
The second part of your talk, or the second half of the title of your talk, is hope for the future. Are there things specifically that you can talk about?
Yes, many things, I think. First one is LNG.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the export Alaskan LNG from Alaska to Japan will be happen soon, maybe within 10 years. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
So I think that's important. Good news. And the second is security cooperation. Last Friday, Prime Minister. Japanese Prime Minister met with President Obama and concluded that our alliance is contribute to the stability in the Asia-Pacific region.
Mm-hmm. Specifically, are there any events coming up that will bring Japanese and Americans closer together in Alaska?
We are doing a lot of things. People at the grassroots level, people are doing lots of things. For example, sister-city relationship. This is a grassroots activities, but I think the most important elements to further strengthen the relationships.
Do we have a sister city relationship in Juneau?
We have a sister city relationship with Hakodate in Hokkaido.
We have nine sister city relations between any city in Japan and Alaskan cities. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So. Tonight is the speech by the consul, and then what's next for JWAC?
Next Sunday at 4 o'clock in the Egan Room at Centennial Hall, Senator Begich will be talking to us about Arctic issues. And on March 8th and 9th, we have a forum on China and business and other relations with China, and we'll have a number of authorities from all over the United States coming in for that. So I'm hoping that we'll have a nice audience for that at the University of Alaska Southeast, the Egan Lecture Hall.
Mm-hmm.
The first speaker will be David Peets, who's a history professor at the University of Washington, who will be speaking about, provide an overview of Chinese history, modern Chinese history. And then we'll have speakers all day Saturday at the lecture hall at the Egan Lecture Hall at UAS, and we're hoping folks will come to that. It should be an interesting day.
So people need to watch for announcements of these events, but make a note, because Senator Begich is Sunday, and then the World Affairs Council Forum, China in the 21st Century, is coming up, but tonight at 7 o'clock.
No, 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock. Tonight at 5 o'clock down in the KTOO studios, we will be honored by the presence of Consul Funayama, who will talk about Japan and Alaska's future together.
And we would invite people to come and ask questions of the consul.
Yes, this is not a television event so much as we record it and show it on television, but it's just wonderfully convenient to hold it in the KTOO studios, and the public is invited. Thank you so much, gentlemen.
Juno World Affairs Council presents Arctic Issues with U.S. Senator Mark Begich, Sunday, March 3rd at 4 p.m. in the Egan Room of Centennial Hall. Senator Begich will address an array of Arctic issues, both old and new, which are a concern to the state and nation as a whole. This event, made possible with support from Greens Creek, Sea Alaska, GCI, AEL&P, Kensington, and Wassman & Associates. That's Sunday, March 3rd, 4 p.m. in the Egan Room of Centennial Hall. JWAC, bringing the world to Juno.
This is Bird Note. We've talked about important bird areas many times here on Bird Note. Well, Rita Schultz, a rural mail carrier outside of Richmond, Virginia, says every person's yard is an important bird area. Here's her story, first told in Audubon magazine. Many customers on Rita's mail route also have newspaper delivery boxes, open at one end. When Rita discovered that eastern bluebirds were nesting in the boxes, and that many customers were throwing the nests out, she went into high gear. Rita asked all the people on her route if she could put up bluebird boxes on their property. More than half of them agreed. After Rita and a friend put up the boxes, the bluebirds needed no coaxing. They moved quickly from the old boxes to the new ones, tailor-made for them. But there have been challenges. Rita's mail route runs along the James River, home to many black snakes. Inevitably, snakes found their way into the bluebird boxes. Not a good thing for bluebirds. She won't kill a snake, mind you. Her parents raised her to respect all wildlife. So, what was her solution? Rubbing Vicks Vapor Rub on the base of the pole. Snakes, it seems, have no taste for Vicks. Rita, thank you for making life a little easier for bluebirds. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
It's about 12 minutes before 4 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. My next guest is here to tell us about a fascinating program at Gastineau Elementary School. Patrick Murphy is here. So I hear it's the guitar of the week kind of thing.
Huh? We're kind of the guitar mecca of Juneau, that's for sure.
So what's happening? This is your music program.
This is the actual music program at Gastineau, and if you don't mind, Pat, I'll read you what's on the wall in our music room. There's a poster that we have sitting up in the room, top front of the room. It's kind of our philosophy. At Gastineau, we learn to sing and play instruments so we can share music with our friends, class, and community. And so everything we do in music class, there are some appreciation lessons, but for the most part, it's a very performance-based music program. Our kids are singing and playing instruments every day, K through 5. The string program starts in second grade with the baritone ukulele. All second graders learn to play one. And those mostly live at school for the first year for them to learn how to take care of an instrument, how to make chord changes, how to play music with other people, how to stop and start together. And then in third grade, they all learn to play the guitar. And in fourth and fifth grade, I open it up to other guitar family and guitar-like instruments. We have banjos, mandolins, and auto harps, and soprano ukuleles as well. And after a couple years of just real basic playing, the kids just come in and grab the instrument they're working on, and we play. And that happens every day at our school. Fridays are a real special day, mainly because I love Fridays. And so I was trying to figure out a way to celebrate Fridays years ago. And I did an artist in residency in Bethel and saw a really neat program where they called it Friday Morning Showcase. And each class would share a work in progress of some sort, either a theater work or some writing piece, but the whole school would gather. And I watched this, and the two things that struck me about it the most when I saw this happen was, one was, entire schools K through 5 were present for this and enjoying what was going on. It wasn't a very rigid sit still thing. They were really watching and communicating with the performers, whether it be a theater piece or whatever. And then the other thing I really liked about it was teachers would do this before kids were performance ready. So it was a work in progress. So it was a very relaxed atmosphere. And so I was trying to figure out a way to do that here in Juneau with my music program. And I started to think about some of the hurdles that come across for kids playing music. And I used to teach the secondary middle school band and orchestra program when I first moved here, and that was great. And the kids were very serious and very polished, but there was a whole group of kids leading up to that point that would maybe not continue to go on, even though they had started in band or orchestra. And I think that once they made that decision, it was really hard for them to come back. And so I wanted a program that was really inclusive of come-and-go kids that are interested in doing something one day, but maybe they want to hang out with their friends the next. And so we started this Friday morning sing-along. And so I'll bring a group out into the commons, and I'll say good morning to everybody, and we start to play. And we play for about 15 minutes, and we do songs everyone in the school knows, and everybody sings along. Parents who are bringing their kids to school and dropping them off stay and sing with their daughters and sons. Older kids stand with their siblings. Sometimes you'll see brothers and sisters holding hands and singing. It's the greatest thing. And that's in a school of 336 kids. And so it's something I'm very proud of for our kids, that they can do that and that our families come every Friday. There's new faces. It's something we're all really excited about, and I'm really proud of them.
We are, in the educational system, we are so locked down many times on the idea of reading, writing, and arithmetic, that we don't realize the incredible value of something like what you're doing. And it has to do with personal development. Being up in front of people, and I love your phrase about before being performance ready, is such an important part of being successful in the world. And music does that in ways that nothing else does, because not all of us can have acting parts, and not all of us can be great public speakers, and there aren't opportunities for public speaking. But, geez, the times in your life when you'll be able to pick up a stringed instrument and start playing it and have people around you instantly.
And the singing too, Pat. Like, I don't want to interrupt you there, but for me, and as I'm sure our audience can hear, I have the voice now that I had when I was 6. It's only slightly lower. And so I've never had what would be considered a pretty voice. And through school, my teacher, and I'm sorry, if she can hear me in heaven, but Miss Wittmeyer was horribly cruel to me as a kid. And she'd say, oh, honey, you can't sing, just mouth the words. And it wasn't until I was 21 years old and I saw Pete Seeger yelling at a group of music teachers at a music convention because they wouldn't sing with him. And somebody said, well, I'm a trumpet player, I'm not a singer. And we have this vision of Pete Seeger being this kind, grandfatherly folk musician. And he chewed them out. Every voice is unique. Find an instrument that's that way. Every voice has beauty. find something else that's us way. And I think that's about the time I started singing. I was in my 20s before I really opened my mouth and started to sing. And I see a lot of kids that have been, whether it be pressure or peer pressure or whatever, that feel that way about their voice. And I would say it's not that way at Gastineau. And I also teach part of the week at the charter school, and they have a great music program that's very similar, and they also do a lot of singing. And I think these schools where everyone's encouraged to sing together. And I was in a workshop where I heard somebody say something that just made me cringe. He said, well, you know, when you're working with kids who sing, not everybody has it. And I just, that broke my heart a little bit, because I think just like learning in general or their perception of beauty, it's something that everybody possesses, and it's their own thing. And I think really finding a way to showcase that for our kids,
yeah,
and a way to make them feel comfortable about it and to celebrate it. And that's something we do every week.
I have so many graphic artists who come on the show, and we invariably come down to the fact that everyone is an artist. Everyone can draw. I can't remember who the cartoonist was who was here about a week ago, did a workshop to both of the libraries about graphic novels. And he had had the same experience that all of us had had. Someone had said to them, I'm saying, well, those are stick figures, you can't draw. And you have to overcome that. It's like, but why plant it in the head in the first place? Just draw.
Right.
Just sing.
Sing. That's right. We could all use that.
Ain't it amazing?
Yeah.
Well, I'm proud of you. That's
thank you.
That's a heck of a program. I hear you've exported it. Now they're doing it at other schools around town?
They are. Mendenhall River has been doing it for a couple of years. Mike Moss out there, who's great. And then Harborview has started to do Friday morning sing-alongs. And something that I just think is great, it's being led by Jack Fontenella, who's a first grade teacher, and there's a couple other teachers. I'm sorry I don't have all my names down, but it's the community of teachers there that have instituted it. The music teacher is definitely involved, but the school decided they wanted this event. And so that made me very proud, too. I thought that was the right motivation behind something like that. So I'm really proud of them for doing it.
Obviously, the reception for a program of your type at Gastineau is quite good. We're looking at probably again. We already know we're looking at a set of budget cuts for the school district, and one of the programs that's always teetering on the edge under those circumstances is the arts. Anything having to do with the arts, because we go back to the three R's.
It
again,
is.
You know? Yeah.
But in defense of that, Pat, I will say, I mean, my experience with the Juneau School District has been where it's hard for me is when it comes down to teacher time. That you're going to be at this building less than you were last year. But as far as materials and activities for the kids, the district has continued to fully fund instruments for my program, buses, after-school buses, monies for the after-school club. Those are areas where I think the district's really hitting 100%. And I think because they're looking at at-risk or a very mixed population of students, and they want to have something that really encourages them to come to school. Because one thing we do know about education is the kids that graduate, the ones who walk across, have made that decision in elementary school.
Yeah.
And so attendance, I think, is huge. And those fun programs, those great non-competitive athletic programs, those hiking programs, those girl-on-the-run programs, all those things that are going on in the district, I think that's where the district really has it right. If I had one critique, I would say more money for teachers so that there would be a music teacher all day long in every school. But I don't even know if that's really a district decision. I think that comes from state funding with the allocation.
Yeah.
But even through stress, I feel pretty supported. They've never tried to take instrument money away from us. They've never tried to take activity money away from us. So I think that's one thing I'm really proud of the district for standing up to.
Pat Murphy, amazing program. Thank you so
much
for telling us about
it.
And I guess people could come in off the street on Friday morning if they wanted
just
to.
Just check in at the office and get a tag.
Check in at the office.
We'd sure love to have you.
And come prepared to sing, right?
That's right. You bet.
Okay, good enough.
Thank you
so much.
In the last concert of the season, Gold Street Music will feature Jim Noel, Shona Strasser, Riley Woodford, and Mike Moss, Mary DeSmet, and Greg Berger, Joe Emerson, and Robert Cohen. This will be at Resurrection Lutheran Church at 10th and Glacier, downtown, on Saturday night, March 2nd at 7:30. Tickets will be available at the door. I hope you join us.
Well, we've enjoyed a wonderful lineup of guests today on Juno Afternoon. We've had Ken Fix drop in and tell us about tonight's program at the Planetarium. Colleen McKenzie was here. She's one of the AWARE Women of Distinction, the banquet coming up this weekend. Koichi Funayama was our guest. He's speaking at JWAC's, the Juno World Affairs Council presentation tonight at 5 downstairs in KTOO. And Pat Murphy was just here telling us about the Friday morning sing-alongs at Gastineau Elementary. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO in Juno, Alaska. We're broadcasting on 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We also broadcast in the area on a set of translators in the Ballynock Bay. We're on K276 AF at 103.1. You get a better signal in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek if you tune to 101.7 and hear K269 AO. K201 AM is on 88.1 in Gustavus. K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Straits, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS. That's at 89.9 megahertz. Here in Juneau, we're on GCI Cable Juneau Channel 871, and we're also on www.ktoo.org.